Greetings. This is James Gill with As You Wish Talk Radio. I've got a great show tonight. I've got Victor Vigiani here. Victor is currently the Director of Media Relations for Exopolitics Canada. He's also co-hosts the Richard Syrett Show on AM 740 Radio in Toronto. His study of anomalous aerial phenomenon research and analysis of extraterrestrial issues spans over 30 years. His experience involves UFO sightings, report investigations, as well as academic and radio journalism in the field of ET disclosure and related issues. There's much, much more to this story, which we'll get into, but we'll do that during the show. So, Victor, are you with us?
I am with you, James. It's great to be with you.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure. I look forward to situations like this where we can talk about this fantastic phenomenon and what's going on in the ways it occurs. Yeah.
It's getting crazy out there. Have you been? I'm sure you've been following October 13th and 14th predictions and all the other things going on. What's your take on that?
Well, it's I really don't know what to think of it. To be really honest with you, James, It sort of caught us in a way, caught people off guard. But myself and Richard Syrett back in August of this year, actually August the 1st of this year, we interviewed Stan Fulham. On our radio program for a good hour, and I'm not sure if your listeners have read the book Challenge to Change by Stan Fulham, but we had a tremendous interview with this individual back in August of this year, as I said, and he made his prediction for the first time on air, live to air with us. And we were all sort of taken aback as to why this individual would go out on such a limb and make such a prediction. But when you read the book, it looks like this man might be privy to information that most people just aren't. Then all of a sudden, you know, 2 or 3 months pass, and then on the actual day that he predicted, you get these strange, bizarre anomalies in the sky over Manhattan, and reported anomalies in places like El Paso and other parts of the United States and even in China as a result of that, you get to believe or you get to feel that something is going on. And I'm not sort of putting all of my eggs in one basket and considering this a sign from above, so to speak, but on the other hand, we cannot dismiss the coincidental nature of this, the synchronistic, I guess, occurrence of something like this and someone predicting it is a little bit more than we counted on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've watched all this and I go, you know, this is interesting. And my analytical mind is going, well, okay, if we would have predicted any other dates and watched the world, would there be sightings everywhere else? But I think it's pretty interesting that they did appear definitely over Texas and over New York and over and actually a whole village disappeared in China, according to the reports. That's a pretty major event happening, so it is pretty hard to discount.
For sure, and yet just as an observer of this for the past 30 some odd years, when I first started doing this kind of work, these kinds of occurrences were just unheard of. We did not, there were sightings, of course, that we had a lot of different kinds of sightings, but there just seems to be something going on lately, James, where whoever and whatever these things are, they're manifesting themselves in some pretty bizarre ways, and it almost seems like the gradual way that they are disclosing or manifesting themselves to us, whoever they might be and whatever they might be, it's a little bit more than just coincidence, so we have to take a bit more notice of it. And I think if you look in just the regular press and the regular mainstream media, the amount of coverage today, even just within the last year and a half, compared to the last, let's say, 10 or 15 years, we're going on an exponential curve towards much, much more coverage, much more involvement, and much more discourse about the whole issue of UFOs and the potential of it being an extraterrestrial presence among us. And there are many people sort of sitting on the fence, who were sitting on the fence, who've more or less come over to the side of, hey, listen, something is really going on here. We have to take notice of it. We just can't, lock it up into a little box and say, well, these are just strange phenomena of weather or different kinds of celestial phenomena. There's something definitely going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people that were very skeptical years ago are beginning to understand that they have to look at this information a whole lot more seriously than they were before.
Yeah, I agree with you. the big question is, what is that something, and who's behind it? And I know a lot of our listeners here, there's some, you know, major conspiratorial people, and I really don't. I call them more factual people myself. I don't like that word, conspiratorial programming. A lot of people are saying it's Project Bluebeam or the government's involved. And then when you hear his story talking about some of the grays and the other beings that have a history of working with the government, you're kind of wondering what is behind this? What's their end game? You know, what is behind this whole disclosure program that's happening in the skies right now?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think it's got a lot of people stumped, especially some of the journalists who want to get involved with this. I'm talking about sort of the mainstream journalists who are looking at this from outside the box that you and I sort of operate in. Well, in other words, I think what they're doing is they're looking at the information and the idea that disclosure or whatever this anomalous phenomenon must be, there is definitely something to it, as I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think one of the things that we have to understand is that as soon as something like this happens, I think the human mind and I think the rational mind automatically slips into a gear or a mode where it looks for a rational explanation. And it's
mm-hmm.
almost a natural instinct. If you see something that's anomalous in the sky, your first instinct, and most people, is, oh, well, it was just a balloon, or well, it was just ball lightning, mm-hmm. or well, it was a meteor, or well, it was an experimental aircraft, or whatever. And I'm not sure, I have some reason to believe that we have been conditioned to go into that mode very quickly. And
mm-hmm.
most of the people in society sort of rely on that as their default position as to what these things might be. And it's almost like some of us are sort of genetically engineered to discount the obvious. The obvious thing is that these things are in the sky. They're picked up on radar. They're seen visually by pilots and radar air traffic controllers. There's something going on there. And to discount it completely and to say that, well, the government's involved in some sort of experimental activity, and to be really honest with you, James, I think that there is some truth to that at this point in time. My estimation is that the government does have some type of craft that do behave strangely in the skies. I have my own personal evidence about that. When I visited Area 51 in 1996, I saw something in the sky for over three nights there, and I can well assure you that it was not extraterrestrial. It was definitely something that was either back engineered or some type of experimentation, because it was definitely not an extraterrestrial manifestation at the time. So I have no doubt that the government has some sort of operation going on, but that type of explanation does not explain the kinds of sightings that we had as way back as far as the early 1900s or even the late part of the 1800s, and even earlier than that, when none of the governments of the world had any type of exotic propulsion system to do anything. They couldn't even fly, for crying out loud. they couldn't even get off the ground. Then these things are manifesting themselves for literally hundreds and perhaps even thousands of years before. So the experimental aspect of that doesn't hold water completely, although there seems to be some evidence that the military does have some type of exotic aircraft that perhaps use anti-gravity. We're not quite sure, but they definitely do behave in a bizarre way. So you have to wonder, is there something going to come about? And as soon as it does come about, the government can go into its fallback position and say, well, it was just a experimental aircraft. But I think we have
mm-hmm.
a lot more discernment than that. I think we're a whole lot smarter than that, James. We know what's going on. We know the government's been hiding this for years and years. We're not knuckle-dragging people here. We're not, Neanderthals that can be forced to swallow some silly explanation as to why an aircraft can fly over 12,000 miles an hour in our atmosphere and make no sonic boom. Some pretty intelligent people out there who can tell the difference between an experimental aircraft and an off-world craft.
It's a nightly thing here. We pull out lawn chairs and watch them in the front yard.
We
see them all the time, and they interact with people. They drop down in, they power up, they light the whole sky up, and then make a turn and take off. And we interact with lasers with them, and you know, it's if we have clear skies, they're there on a regular basis. And, you know, the most phenomenal one I think we have that it just nails it is we had one come down, land on the mountain, and morph from one to three and back to one. And it kept doing this over and over again, and then it took off. And we have it all on film. The whole thing is on film. Witnesses, everything. You hear everybody commenting. Mm-hmm. And you know, we showed this to the OMSI Planetarium and a NASA guy, and they said, "Oh, that's the space shuttle. That's nothing more than the space shuttle." landed.
Yeah.
It's landed on the mountain.
Of course,
and it's
yeah.
morphing from one to three. How?
Yeah.
Show
yeah.
me a space shuttle that can land on Mount Adams. There's nothing up there. And then so we went up and we filmed that area, and all there is just steep cliffs and ice and glaciers and it's you could not. There's no roads up there. Nothing. It's wilderness area, and there's no way any vehicle could get up there either. It's you'd have to go over cliffs, over giant lava boulders, and then over ice, and then back to cliffs and lava again. And it's just unthinkable that any vehicle that wasn't a hovercraft could make it over that terrain.
Yeah, I think that what you're pointing out there, James, is the fact that when the government attempts to make an explanation about that kind of occurrence, it's quite clear that they don't know what it is either.
Mm-hmm.
Either they are trying to deflect interest or attention from their own craft, or that they're absolutely puzzled as to what it might be. And it's really kind of funny that you should mention that the thing that you saw was a single unit light, and then it burst, and then it developed into three. You said,
yeah, turned into three.
Yeah, it's the experience that I had in 1996. My wife and I did a sort of a 3-month excursion through Arizona and Nevada and New Mexico, and we camped out for 3 nights in a row just outside of Area 51. And on the second night that we were there, we were driving along Highway 375, and my wife looked out the window to the north across the large expanse of desert that's there, just over the mountains. And she pointed out a very, very bright white light, much more bright. It was a totally clear night, probably about 8:30 in the evening, just turning dark. And we stopped the car and got out. And this light was, if you held your arm out and held a dime between your thumb and your forefinger, it was that big. And as we were looking at it, it was just still. And it became like diaphanous. In other words, it changed from a dense white light into a white light that you could almost see through. It was translucent.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as the translucent nature of the light began to become a little bit more dense, it started spinning. And as it started to spin, it broke into three separate dots of a light orange color. And these dots formed a small triangle within that circle and began to spin and rotate faster and faster and faster. And my wife and I are standing back looking at this thing going, what in God's name could this possibly be? I mean, there's nothing that I've ever seen in my life. And I've sat out by airports, watched airplanes take off, watched them land from a distance. There's nothing in my experience that could ever even come close to replicating this kind of experience. And as it became rotating faster and faster, it got smaller and smaller and smaller, and then it coalesced into a small orange light, and then it just zipped off to the farther north in literally a blink of an eye. And we sat there, and we just looked at each other and said, what did we see? What on earth was that? And so that kind of thing kind of challenges the reality that we all fundamentally have about, you know, who we are, where we are, what is normal. And you begin to really wonder what's really going on. And I can guarantee your listeners that wasn't an extraterrestrial craft. It was something that was just unexplainable. Unless the ETs are hanging out over Area 51 and I don't know about it, which maybe they are. I don't know.
yeah, they might be coming and going.
Right.
I heard from some resources that we do have some pretty exotic technologies there. I've worked with some physicists that some of them have like 9 degrees, you know, they're like incredible. And they always come here and they want to spill their guts. I don't know. They need to tell somebody. And I can't really divulge who they are. I have had triple PhD Boeing engineers and Lockheed engineers and Skunk Works engineers come here, and they have testified. They've gone on coast to coast and testified about the ships they've seen here. And at the last big conference we had a ship come in. Alfred was there, Alfred Weber with the other Exopolitics, and we did an intention experiment to invite them in, and the ship came in and flew right over the conference building and was filmed by a Lockheed engineer. So we had the intention experiment, 200 witnesses and three people videotaped it, you know. So
that's astounding.
Yeah, that's a tough one to try to disclaim, you know. It's, I don't know how they, but they do, you know, they still try to disclaim that.
It is amazing how those attempts to disclaim are taken as factual, whereby the things that people of normal and intelligence, or even at the level of expertise that you're talking about seeing,
mm-hmm.
the way people can automatically just sort of toss the information out. And I think it's almost an irrational refusal to accept the obvious. And
mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that the obvious has become the fact that we are being visited by off-world civilizations. That is the fact. It used
mm-hmm.
to be a question mark in a lot of people's minds. But right now, the fact of the matter is that we are, in fact, being visited by off-world life forms. And that's so difficult, Jane, for a lot of people in the normal, you know, workaday reality that exists beyond, in the world of television and radio and Hollywood and, you know, politics. In industry and science and technology, in those worlds, we are not allowed to
mm-hmm.
talk about those kinds of things. We are not allowed to consider them as possibilities. And that's gone on for so long that the obvious is gradually cracking that sort of what I call the glass ceiling of disclosure. And that glass ceiling is gradually being punctured by the obvious
mm-hmm.
that, you know, what you're describing, you know, the visitation of a craft like that, you just can't discount it. You just can't say, well, it didn't happen. Something happened.
Yeah.
And we have to take it as a reality. Now, those among the intelligence community and the military who just are just so blind to all this, they're blind because of political reasons, and I think we're all aware of what those political reasons are and might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's up to, you know, programs like these and the work that I do and the experts that you have in your program. It's up to us to bring that reality to people and have them consider it so that it's okay to talk about this kind of stuff. And it's not stuff that you can look at with ridicule or you know, in a skeptical way anymore. It's just too obvious.
Well, I have to commend you coming from, you're a retired school principal, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And, you know, coming from that from that position, it really leads a lot of credence to this subject, and you know, you don't become a school principal by being wacko, you know.
That's yeah. right. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
some people might think I. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really, it's almost to the point now where there are so many professional people getting involved in this, almost because they're forced to, because they're seeing things either that are real or what they're doing, which I think is even a testament to their own sort of curiosity, is that they are reading more about it. More and more professional people are becoming involved in this stuff, and it's really great to see this. We had an incident here in Canada. It was just about 3.5 to 4 weeks ago. A doctor. I believe he's a neurosurgeon in Montreal. He was leaving the hospital, and he was admittedly said that he didn't believe in UFOs, but he was walking from the hospital to his car, and the sighting was quite obvious what he saw. It was definitely not an aircraft of any kind. He went public with it. And those kinds of people are doing that more and more. And what I think is happening is that the amount of ridicule that's heaped upon these people is becoming less and less because the,
mm-hmm.
especially the news media up here, I'm getting calls almost weekly to appear on radio programs or to give my opinion on something that's appeared in the newspaper to do with UFOs. So we are gradually moving the idea of UFOs and off-world civilizations into the consciousness of the general public, and I think that's it's a very, very important move that's happening. So, and I guess programs like yourself, this is the kind of thing that some people listen to that say, "Well, yeah, I'm a believer. I know what's going on." But then there are people who are listening right now that they're saying that, what are they really talking about? So those are the people that we have to move from that other reality into this new reality of disclosure, to say, listen, what you've been told by your government is a lie, basically. There's no other word for it. And we have to make them understand that there's something going on, and there are political reasons why this information is not getting out.
Exactly. We had Robert Salas was just here. Actually, he was here at the ranch and dropped in for, you know, a couple nights. And pretty amazing. You know, he had quite a sighting, not only just over his head, flying over his head, but he saw one moving all over the mountain, and he has no problem going public with that. But I talked to him a lot about, you know, what was going on, and here's a guy that has his finger on nuclear weapons, you know, and they don't, the ships came in and just completely shut down the whole site, shut down all the missiles, everything. It shows an extreme technology. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, what was your take on that? Do you think they are negative, that they came here for a negative agenda? He goes, I don't think so. He said, I think they're here to stop us from killing ourselves. And he said he felt that they had a positive intention as far as what was going on there. So I just see a lot of times there's a real push to create a threat, you know, around this situation. And I think the threat's already here. It's already well established and on the ground. It's not coming from off-world visitors.
We are the threat.
Yeah.
We are the threat. It's interesting you should mention that, because we're having Robert Salas on our radio program on the Richard Serrett Show tomorrow night.
Oh, great.
Yeah, we're doing another interview with him. We had an interview with them, with Bob Hastings and with Bob Salas about 2 months ago, before their press conference, and then we're doing a follow-up tomorrow. And Bob and I have been in communication several times over the past little while, and we've had some pretty good conversations about the offshoot, about the residual implications of what all this really means. And my opinion on that is that we don't really know what the intention of these people really is, or what the intentions are. My sense is that if they were aggressive, and I'm looking at the whole group of, you know, whatever number of alien civilizations might be out there, if they were aggressive and if they were colonialistic or imperialistic in any kind of way, they would have made moves much longer in time, much in the past. They would have made a lot of overtures that would have appeared to us as negative or aggressive long before this. So there's a couple of scenarios that I'd like to talk about. Number one, that there is an agreement among them as a group that the planet Earth is sort of off limits for them to take any kind of aggressive action. That they consider us as a life form that's very, very unique. I know that Stan Fulham, he is of the opinion that his information is that they value the planet Earth in a way that they value probably no other planet in our own solar system, because of our uniqueness, not only because of the uniqueness of the planet, but because of the potential of our own life form. There's just something about us, our physicality combined with our spirituality and all of the things that make us unique as human is very interesting to them. And I think that we show a lot of potential. And I think Bob Salas is right that whatever these extraterrestrials are doing right now, they are trying to send us a very, very subtle message. They're not hitting us over the head with a baseball bat and saying, you know, this is the way it's going to be. You know, I think they're relying on our own free will and freedom of expression and understanding and our basic spiritual nature to understand that there is a benevolence there at work, and that we have to be open to their communication. And right now, I don't think the planet Earth as a whole is understandably open to this kind of contact. There's still the fear threat because of the government, the military, and intelligence agencies telling the general public that the whole idea behind the alien factory is, in fact, a threat. We've been so well conditioned, James, to feel that. So there's really no big surprise as to why the general public feels that there is an extraterrestrial threat out there. But
it seems to be automatic, you know.
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah.
And Hollywood is just totally bombarded us with movies of ETs, you know, coming to make human pilaf out of us.
Of course, yeah.
And,
yeah. If you take a look at some of the movies that are on now, you shake your head in astonishment, and it's almost to the point where you say there has to be a program of some kind of the installation of fear in the human species about anything that's extraterrestrial. There's little wonder as to why the general public and the press are so fearful, innately fearful, of any type of discourse or public discourse about it. I wrote an article last year, and the article was called "Thou Shalt Not Believe in UFOs," and I tried to outline exactly what we're talking about right now. Is that if you give it any credence as a journalist, you are automatically put in the back seat. You are automatically labeled as a wacko, as you said earlier. But now the information is coming out the way it is, and the number of professional people that are coming forward, and with the documentation that we have, that the government has in fact hidden this information from us. When you start connecting all of these dots, James, it's quite obvious that the media has to begin taking this much more seriously and looking at the potential threat of this as being just a way or another part of the cover-up in an attempt not to disclose anything.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're going to have so much egg on their face pretty soon. You know, they're kind of smirking and laughing at everybody else, and now all these ships are starting to appear around the world. And the vast majority of people know. I read a Time CNN poll a long time ago, but they keep fudging these polls. But it said 86% of the people believe that UFOs do exist and there is a government cover-up. So, the vast majority of the people want to know what's going on and really don't believe the official story on much of anything anymore.
I've
lost credibility.
Oh, for sure. I think there's a couple of points to your comments there, James. I think the first point is that the gradual desensitization. If you take a poll, and we did on the Richard Serrett show, about this business of the city of Denver trying to put forward the Extraterrestrial Affairs Commission in Denver with Jeff Peckman, and it looks like that's going to pass. We're hoping that an Extraterrestrial Affairs Committee in Denver is in fact voted up by the people in Denver. And we had a poll on the Richard Serrett show, and over 78% of the people who voted in the city of Toronto said that they would in fact vote for an extraterrestrial affairs commission. Now that doesn't mean anything in the world of reality, but what it does mean is that there is a level of understanding or sensitivity out there that says, yes, I want to know about this. I know that my government's not telling me the whole story on this. And you take a look at the over the past 15 to 20 years, for as long as I've been involved in this, that percentage is going up each year. And the more people I talk to in the general public, the more I'm getting feedback is that the government is not telling us the whole story, whereby if you asked that same question 25 years ago, they would say, oh, no, it's not true. There's nothing to this. It's all just made up, or it's this, that, or the other thing. There's a clear shift in the public, intellect, the collective intellect among the public, and we've done a pretty good job of changing that. And I guess the second part of your point there, James, is that the government has lied to us for over 60 years about this. And when this thing comes down, a lot of heads are going to roll. The people that are in power right now, the intelligence communities that are keeping this information sequestered, they've inherited a real mess. Let's be frank about that. Okay. They've inherited a real mess from their predecessors, and they have to keep this secret. They're forced to keep a secret. And my information is, from some people within the intelligence community that I know, is that a lot of them wanted to come forward. But because of the structures of government, it's just not allowed. So you've got that internal pressure, too. So there's a lot going on that will really allow us to, over time, to bring this forward in a really meaningful, rational, and understandable way, which I think is a good thing.
Oh, I do, too. I've said all along that the real disclosure is going to be coming from the skies, but we do need the ground crew,
excellent point. Yes.
Lay the groundwork and things like that, and in a way, I was saying that because what we have here is I call them cosmic cheerleaders. They come in here on a regular basis, and there's times you get down, you go, what am I doing this for, and
oh, you get that feeling too.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone else does.
And you even question yourself, too. You question yourself, well, maybe these are government, you know, maybe these, and all of a sudden one comes in and does something really radical, and they when they come, that you feel them, you feel this big burst of energy, and you get real giddy and really high, and they do their little cheerleading thing, and then you get right back on track, and you're, okay, I'm on the right track. I know, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but the it seems to be happening everywhere right now, and I just, I don't see how between now and you know, I think in between now and this November, things are just going to really heat up, it's sad, you know, but the government, especially over here in America, has let down the people in so many ways that they're just done. You know, they're basically just done with it. You know, we've had the banksters, you know, now we have these Frankenfoods and all these diseases coming from those. I can go on and on. We've got all the vaccines that are deadly that they're throwing out there, you know, it just goes on and on. Where now, you know, we have a corporate dictatorial democracy right now, run by the corporations, which are just all about profit. And I think, you know, enough people have lost their homes now to where it's personal, and who knows where this is going to go. But I don't think it's going to go on much longer.
You know, there are a lot of forces, a lot of factors that are proving that the political system that we all have all sort of put in place, or that we have all sort of let ride for the you know, foreseeable past, I think we are going to be paying a very large price in the final analysis if we don't do something very proactive about getting this information out in a rational way to have the general public understand that there is going to be a shift in dimensionality. There's going to be a shift in thinking. There's going to be a shift in the social order. There's going to be a lot of change hitting us within the next little while. And I think that your comment about something happening in a gradual way this November or leading up to November, I'm feeling and seeing a momentum like I've never seen and felt before. And I've been involved in this for well over 30 years. And I'm seeing that momentum increase geometrically to a point where people, like I mentioned this earlier, where people who would have just dismissed this offhand as just absolute bunk, 10 years ago, are now on side. I'm seeing much, much more of that. And I think the kind of disclosure that's going to happen is going to be a combination of both. The realistic understanding among the, as you call it, the ground crew, propelling this information forward into the media and into the public consciousness as we're doing right now on this radio program and many radio programs. I mean, you just take a look at the number of UFO extraterrestrial related phenomena, radio internet programs that are on the air, and it's just, you know, it's mind-boggling the number of people that are talking about this on the internet. And I think the other part of it too is the part that the extraterrestrials are going to play in their own way. And I think that whole agenda that they are subtly putting forward to us is making our awareness that much more malleable, that much more impressionable, that much more open. And I think that the level of sensitivity of the man on the street right now is going to force the media and going to force government to consider this. I'm waiting for the day, James, where the White House press corps, you know, the idea behind, you know, the press conference that the president has with all of the press corps sitting in their seats and the president's up at the podium. I'm eventually waiting for someone to break that silence in that room. And I don't know if your listeners are aware of it or not, but the press corps are not allowed to ask any questions about UFOs on the floor of the press. They're not permitted to do that. I'm waiting for that to be broken. I'm waiting for that to happen, and I'm waiting for the President of the United States, not that we necessarily need him to say something one way or another. You and I don't. We know the reality, but there are a lot of other people out there who will not take this as fact unless someone of that level of political authority makes a comment on it. As unfortunate as that is, it's a reality. Some people are going to literally have to be hit over the head with this and said, the President of the United States has now admitted that there is a cover-up, and here's what we're going to do about it. And maybe I'm naive in thinking that. I don't know. But the way things seem to be moving, James, is it's moving in that direction, where you're going to get people of authority coming forward, like the Fife Symingtons of the world, who saw the Phoenix Lights, that kind of thing, like the Edgar Mitchells, like the Paul Helliers. Those people are becoming the majority now. They're coming out and they're talking about this. So this kind of legitimization of this whole idea, once it comes forward, and once it appears on a program like 60 Minutes, for example, or you know, it's in the Washington Post as a headline, that cover-up is real, or whatever it might be, I think that kind of whole legitimization of this issue is really necessary for the common man and for some of the real stoneheads that are in journalism. And that's all they, I'm sorry to say that, I don't want to be pejorative, but they've been hiding their heads under rocks for so long that they've turned into stone themselves. And they need to be moved in a way, as a teacher, I take that, I use that metaphor all the time, James, as an educator. When you are attempting to have a learner understand something that just may be beyond their cognitive ability, you have to go about it in a way that's a little, that's not orthodox. You have to take an unorthodox stance on how you present that information to a person. And sometimes people need to have it literally yelled in their face what reality really is.
Yeah,
and I think that's what will have to happen in many of the cases, in particularly the United States, unfortunately, but and a lot of other places around the world, but particularly the United States, because that's where the cover-up lies.
Yeah, I agree. The I think they're backed in a corner right now, and there's, you know, the vast majority of the people with all these, you know, the Disclosure Project, heads of the FAA, generals, top scientists, all of these people coming forward, you know, they're stuck in a corner, and all they can do is just throw out like an insult, or that's about all they've got left. They don't have anything left to base their opinion on and actually sound intelligent. So I think eventually they are going to have to say something. I know we had actually Hannity come out here, which is pretty conservative with Fox News. And, you know, they sent a crew out here, and it seemed to be kind of like, okay, you know, and we were wondering what they're going to do with it, and they were going to try to discount it and, you know, bring in the debunkers and everything, and they did. But while they were here, the UFOs just kept coming over one after another and powering up, and they couldn't argue what was going on, and we filmed it at the same time they did. So, and I told him, I said, well, how are you going to report this now? Because we have it on our film and you have it on your film. And they did, you know, a pretty positive piece on the ranch here. But they did bring their debunker in, that saying, oh, these are nothing more than satellites or the space shuttle or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when they interviewed me, I pulled up my laptop and I said, look, we're on Heavens Above. We're on JPL site 2. We know the major satellites flying overhead. We know when the space shuttle or the Evastat or any of these major satellites are coming over that you can see with the naked eye. And I go, these do not fit in any of these categories. They're unknowns. And these things are making right angle turns. They're stopping. They're powering up, engaging people. I said, they don't fit any of the parameters here. And so they allowed me, they put that on the show right when they brought the NASA guy in to debunk us. And he looked pretty bad afterwards, you know, because... So it was pretty good. So we have been getting some pretty good coverage, even by the mainstream press. But what we're seeing now is some extreme censorship within the UFO community itself, and that's been going on for about 3 or 4 years now, pretty intensely.
Mm-hmm. In what way are you seeing that? Share that with me.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's with some of the some major radio shows, and also with some of the major events that are going around, we've kind of been dismissed from them. And it's kind of sad because the evidence we have here is just overwhelming. And we've taken a different approach to it. The approach that we took is, look, these beings are probably very spiritually and technologically advanced, and we need to rise to the occasion if we are going to understand who they are and how they operate in their cultures. So we took a more spiritual approach to it, and because of that, we're having contact here, and it's being filmed and documented, and we have the best photographs and footage almost anywhere. It's just amazing. We just have mountains of it. But there's a lot of jealousy. There's a lot of competition in that field, and there's a lot of disinformation in there too. People that are known card-carrying New World Order boys that are on the boards of some of these groups.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate because they that was a very strong element back in the 80s and early part of the 90s up here in Canada, where you had a lot of the people from within the UFO community questioning people's research and people's methods about how they collect data and what these things might be, and sort of an internal strife. And that's pretty much subsided, because I think what's happened is, like what's happening with yourselves, that most of us who are involved in this are trying to stay on the side of I guess, responsible scientific, or at least responsible investigation, or responsible research. And I think it's very difficult to criticize and to be skeptical of good, solid research. Now, I'm not saying that that every researcher that I deal with uses a scientific method, and perhaps that's not what's needed here. The scientific method is not necessarily going to allow us to understand this phenomenon. This phenomenon is going to come to us in many, many different ways. It's going to come to us in a physical way, in physical manifestations, and it's also going to come to us in a spiritual way too. So it's going to hit us from many, many ways, and I don't care what science says about it, whether it either confirms the existence or attempts to disprove the existence of these things. Science is not going to be the final word on whether these things exist or not. I think you and I both know that this thing is real. And when people ask me, do you believe in UFOs? I said it has nothing to do with belief. It's not a matter of faith here. You know, belief and faith are intricately entwined. This is a matter of knowing. John Mack said that 15 years ago. We know that these things exist. It's just a matter of how they manifest themselves is much different than what we expect. So I think a lot of people who are in the nuts and bolts aspect of the UFO research community don't really understand that this thing is coming at us from many, many different directions. And I'm a very firm believer, James, that we ain't seen nothing yet. It's going to unfold in ways that we don't even know, that we don't even understand.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
We've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I have had these conversations with scientists, and we have, people here that are, major PhD people that come here on a regular basis, and we have Air Force base commanders, all kinds of people have been here and have seen the ships and have gone on record, even air traffic controllers, people that see things all the time and know what they're looking at. But with that overwhelming evidence, still you have those scientists that come in and say, well, where's the nuts and bolts? Where's the piece? Where's the body part?
Right.
Where's the piece of the ship? I'm not believing you if I don't see a bolt, an alien bolt or something. And I think that's amazing, because anybody that has studied, physics, just base physics, they know that scientists have accepted that there's at least 11 dimensions out there. And you look at the life in just this third dimension with its 200 whatever billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy with planets around them, and then you take the 500 billion galaxies in this third dimension that we can see and experience, and then you add that to that, 10 more dimensions, you're going, wait a second, this whole world is just so full of potential, it makes no sense whatsoever. But they do. They go after this nuts and bolts, and you're saying, why do you want physical evidence concerning non-physical events that fit into your science? Where did you get your degree? Why are you not accepting, the fact that almost all scientists and physicists are in agreement now that there's at least 11 dimensions out there?
It's fascinating that the human mind, especially the ones that are supposedly or purportedly as intelligent as they purport to be, like the scientific community, has really got their head in the sand with this, thinking that their science is going to be able to make the definitive announcement that these things do exist or do not exist. That's just not going to be the case. The science we've shown over and over again, that our science, our physics, is so limited. I mean, what we know in the physical reality of just this dimension alone is just so limited. You take a look at the idea behind the string theory and even time travel, those kinds of things. We don't know what we don't know. That's my opinion. There are things out there that we just have no idea that exist. And I'm talking about the world of ideas now. And I mean, who is the ultimate sentient deity? I mean, just that whole question about a deity itself. The motivating forces behind that deity and creating the universe—that's a big question mark. And I was brought up as a Catholic, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and I've done a complete turnaround in my understanding of who God might be. And for someone to have their paradigm shift taken on that way, and many others in my age group have done that too. They're really looking at the world and religion and a whole lot of other things in a much, much different way, which makes a lot of us much more open to the idea of the existence of off-world life. And I think that's happening more and more in society. You know, the mainstream person out there who's driving a bus and who's taking a little paycheck, he's just a little bit more aware of this kind of information, a little bit more open to it. And I think that's a really good thing.
It's definitely out there, and it is, I know I was looking at the deal on the Internet, and they said the number two subject that people hit on is UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
It's number two, so there's a huge interest in this. Number one is sex, of course.
Of course, yeah.
That's the way our civilization operates. But I find that interesting. Number two is UFOs, and so you're almost guaranteed success if you work within that field. And I know with our shows, we went to just number one immediately covering these things, and there was such a strong interest in it. And, it wasn't the reason we went into it. It just rocketed, went into it more aligned with soul purpose and interest. But it's going to come out. I mean, this is just such a giant rolling snowball that I think anybody that keeps standing in front of this thing is just going to get run over.
Yeah, you'd better get on the train or get off the tracks. One of the two. You can't just stand there and think that this express train is going to stop just because there are some people on this planet who refuse to open their minds and open their eyes to the reality of what's staring them right in the face. So they're definitely going to have to get on board. And I think that the one of the things that I focus on in my work, James, is the media. And I guess I do it for a couple of reasons. Is because the first reason is because the media is so entrenched in feeding us a regular carousel of garbage on a day-to-day basis. They keep the mind of the average person occupied with the most mundane trash that you could ever imagine. And I think you can only cram so much into an average person's head in a 24-hour or at least a 24-hour waking period of time. And I think our media has done an excellent job of just ramming into the brain of the average person this large amount of trivial nonsense. Be it Hollywood movie stars divorcing and the kind of music that's being played. And I don't want to sound like I'm an old fuddy-duddy or anything like that, but the fact of the matter is, every issue that comes up, and you read the newspaper on a day-to-day basis, and those issues are not there, in my opinion, to inform us. Those issues are there to, misdirect us from the reality that's really going on. And if you keep on throwing information in front of people like that, especially when people, all they're really involved in is just, putting bread on the table, keeping their jobs, drawing a salary, raising families, paying their mortgages, and when you have people involved in those kind of activities on a day-to-day basis and you throw crap at them through the media, most people don't have a good enough crap detector to dismiss it. So you start talking about UFOs, and they're going to put that in the category that I just don't have time for it. It's not part of my life. It's not part of my paradigm. And that's because the media has done such an excellent job in literally brainwashing the public into believing that there's only one reality out there, and that's the realities of sex, money, and rock and roll. And I guess they've done a really good job, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. They have the tarot card, too. Tune in. You should be very scared. You need to...
Of course,
look
at
who's getting murdered and who's getting blown up, and
of course
who's
you have to be paying attention
on the
to
block.
That. Yeah, yeah. Or where's the next war going to occur? All that kind of thing. And it's it's quite disquieting. And I think the extraterrestrials, you know, whoever they may be in terms of their numbers or what type of civilizations are out there, and there are many different civilizations, in some ways, if they are, in fact, as intelligent as they are, one of two possibilities is there. They understand why we as a human species behave the way we do, the way we engage in what I call extinction behaviors, James, these things that will eventually lead us down the road to ruin. It doesn't matter what it is, the development of nuclear weapons, our dependency on fossil fuels, the dysfunctional nature of our economic structures. It doesn't matter what it is. Many of these things are sort of pointed towards our eventual extinction. So whoever these extraterrestrials are, they must be sitting back and either they're shaking their heads and saying, why are these really intelligent people doing this? Or, yes, we understand why a species can get caught up that way. And maybe they are going to be allowing us to see the madness of our ways, the way we've manufactured madness on this planet. And that whole madness is sort of a frenzy of, as I just said earlier, you know, paying your mortgage and just making sure that you know who's killing who and where the next war is coming from, and make sure you're just as afraid as the guy across the street as you are the guy who's living beside you. You know, there's this whole uncertainty. And I think as a human species, we've really got to sort those things out before this whole extraterrestrial issue is going to make sense to a lot of people. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of putting this information forward in a rational way so that people are beginning to understand that contact and disclosure are just around the corner, and we hope that it's going to make sense of the mess that we've put ourselves in.
Oh, I agree. I always, people go, why would they cover this up? And I said, well, think about this. You know, here you have an extremely advanced race comes here. They've transcended all material needs. They've transcended war, disease. You know, they've got fuelless energy technology, you know, and I said, so who would they be a threat to? They would be a threat to the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the war industry, because they, you know, they're at peace. They push universal peace. So they would be a threat to all the major corporations which control the media. And so if you look at it from that level, you go, wait a second, this makes sense. No wonder they've been covering this up. And you know, and also,
of course,
too,
of course, yes.
Yeah, whoever wins the war has the best technology. So
that's
so
right.
We've
yeah.
been back
yeah.
engineering these yeah. weapons and these technologies for the war industry. And so they want to keep it secret and not let the other countries know what's going on, which is understandable. You know, we
of course.
Understand that,
of course, yeah.
that program. But now we're at a time where the Earth needs these technologies, and we need to bring in these new healing modalities, and we need to learn how to get along with each other and you know, in the war on disease and the pollution program. And so they have the answers, and they've transcended this, and they can help us do it as well. So basically we've got the people and the needs of the people, the needs of the planet, and this huge evolutionary jump that's possible versus the beings that want to keep us enslaved through dependency and sick and at war and all these other programs they've got running, the disease and war profiteers who are
yeah.
basically running things right now.
Yeah, well, there's an end game happening here, James. I think that you've just pointed it out very, very well, that end game is the eventual elimination of those kinds of power structures. And that's where the big paradigm shift is going to occur. It's a really difficult situation to imagine for us, where the oil industry, and think about this for a second, where the oil industry, just as one example, has absolutely no role in geopolitics anymore. Think about that for a second. I mean, if, in fact, that does happen, the implications are going to be horrendous. I'm not sure. They're going to be huge. Whether they're horrendous or not, I'm not sure. But the implications of the oil industry and all the people that are the controlling factors within that paradigm, if that changes or becomes a non-entity, that is change that this planet hasn't seen for literally thousands of years, since Galileo talked about the Earth not being you know, in the center of the universe. I mean, that's how impressive that whole, you know, war generating factor is, because really the oil industry funds wars, and that's basically
Definitely.
It.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at just that one little bit of change, most people aren't comfortable with the fact that the seasons change the way they do.
Yeah.
You know, it takes them a long time to get used to just the change in a presidency, for example, or just, you know, or ordinary social change in funding programs. Mm-hmm. People don't adapt to change that well. So I think in a lot of ways, some of the changes that are coming about are going to be difficult. But I think that they're going to be growth pains that we need to go through, James. These are things that have to happen. It's not a matter of choice anymore. The number of intelligence agencies in the United States alone, which numbers over 30 right now, just the number of intelligence agencies that run the United States alone, the Office of Intelligence and Analysis, the Air Force alone has at least 14 itself. And we're talking about the elimination of those kinds of things, the war-generating factors that have directed human consciousness for the past thousands of years. That's a massive amount of change.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that whoever these extraterrestrial beings are not only can bring us to the point of these changes, but could also assist us in managing that change. That's really important
I see. It's definitely unsustainable on every level, and change is coming, and the Earth is going to help us along with that, too. You know, unfortunately, we're out of time. What is the best way for people to get more information concerning your work and any future events that you have unfolding?
Well, Exopolitics Canada, if you just Google exopolitics.ca, you can do that, and you can get to our website, myself and our director, Michael Bird. We have different activities going on. And the other way that you can communicate with myself is I have a website called Zealand Communications, Zland Communications, and it's basically a news outlet, a news agency that we have where we disseminate information. If you just Google Zealand Communications, you'll come up with my website, and you'll be able to follow along with all of the different stories that are happening. We try to stay as current as we possibly can about the kinds of things that are happening, and we're hoping that people will go to those websites and have a look at them and see what's new here up in Canada.
Great. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and lending your wisdom and expertise to the field. It's greatly appreciated and needed.
It's been absolutely a pleasure, James, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Take care now.
All right. We're out of time, folks, so thanks so much for tuning in to As You Wish Talk Radio, BBS. And stay tuned, some more great shows behind us. Have a good evening.